claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go, all suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where Tucker Carlson has been on fire this week. You have many times heard me recommend Tucker. Well, this week, he just was sensational. And while I have faulted him for signs of naivete regarding conspiracy theories, he may be breaking out of the cocoon. This week, he was emphasizing that FBI operatives were organizing the attack on the Capitol on January 6th. This is, in my opinion, completely correct, and that he is making the case for governmental complicity. He discussed the 400 arrests on Tuesday, but he followed it up on Wednesday. He's continuing his expose, questioned by so many indictments, mentioned unindicted co-conspiracies, said those individuals were FBI agents who drove the plot to attack, said it was why 10,000 hours of footage from the Capitol has not been released. He's also questioned why the officer who killed Ashley Babbitt has not been named. Well, that's a very interesting story I will add to, because the officer actually has been identified. It's a curious case. Where red-pilled media reported that the fellow's name was David Bailey, a special agent, that he's a Brazilian immigrant and a Black Lives Matter militant who repeatedly on a Facebook page for months threatened to kill Trump supporters. How bad is this? Red-pilled media has uncovered evidence confirming our previous reporting through self-incriminating Facebook posts, revealing Agent Bailey as a Brazilian immigrant whose pledges allegiance to the deadly Black Lives Matter movement, even going so far as vowing to murder Trump supporters. This is pretty damn bizarre, of course, and significant. where the guy has received, you know, any number of awards, recognition, and distinction. What may be crucial from an evidential point of view is that he has a kind of unusual wristband he wears on his right wrist. And you see it in these ceremonial events. He's got the little wristband on his right wrist, whether he's being given a medal, standing beside President Trump. But most significantly in footage from the Capitol Hill shooting of Ashley Babbitt, which, as many of you are aware, I believe to have been a staged event, you see that the wrist of the shooter has this same distinctive armband. So I believe that, in fact, this guy was the perp. He would have had a motive, but still I'm unconvinced that Ashley Babbitt was actually shot and killed. If I'm mistaken about that, however, if Ashley actually has been shot and killed, then we seem to have the guy who did it. Tucker hasn't caught up with the red-pilled expose, but perhaps he shall shortly, because he's clearly on the rampage here in exposing what happened. Listen, this is a part of the report. Tucker Carlson claimed Tuesday that the Capitol rioters, who were named as unindicted co-conspirators in court documents, were actually federal agents orchestrating the attack. Tuesday night, he referenced a report in Revolver, which looked into the indictments of around 400 persons charged over the January 6th event. More than 2,000 criminal charges have been filed against 411 suspects, including hundreds of felonies such as assaulting police officers and trespassing with a weapon. Carlson noted, however, that many of the indictments mention unidentified co-conspirators. Without fail, the government has thrown the book at most people who were present in the Capitol on January 6th, Tucker observed. There's a nationwide dragnet to find them. Many are still in solitary confinement tonight. But, strangely, some of the key people participating in the January 6th have not been charged. Look at the documents. The government calls them unindicted co-conspirators. What does that mean? It means potentially, in every single case, they were officers. In fact, we have a report now from one who was arrested, a Thomas Caldwell, a 66-year-old former naval officer who allegedly conspired with members of Oath Keepers to storm the Capitol, ignoring, by the way, the massive evidence we have that Antifa was profoundly involved, that Nancy Pelosi appears to have coordinated the entire event, where in her capacity as Speaker of the House, she's in charge of the Capitol Police and would have been the key person in a position to block requests for reinforcements that were being made by the Capitol Police at the time that were not allowed to take place. The Caldwell charging document says he spent the night before the riot staying in the same hotel as one of several persons referred to only as person one, person two, and person three, in this case with person two. Another individual, person three, led Caldwell to believe there'd be a quick reaction force participating in their storming. But wait, here's the interesting thing, said Tucker. Persons two and three were organizers of the riot. The government knows who they are, but the government has not charged them. Why is that? You know why. They were almost certainly working for the FBI. So FBI operatives were organizing the attack on the Capitol on January 6th, according to government documents. Let me say I find this situation highly analogous to the 9/11 research, where the U.S. Geological Survey, which is a branch of the government, conducted research on 35 dust samples selected from different locations in Lower Manhattan that day and discovered the presence of elements, barium, strontium, lithium, lanthanum, tritium, some of which only exist in radioactive form, that would not have been present had this not been a nuclear event. So while the government wants to claim, from the point of view of science and evidence, absurdly, that the Twin Towers collapsed as a consequence of being hit by aircraft that penetrated them before they exploded, which turns out to be a physical and engineering impossibility, they didn't collapse at all. In fact, when you look, you see here an example of the power of language. When they repeat again and again that the buildings collapsed, they're not collapsing. They're blowing apart in every direction, which required from the top down, which required a very powerful source of explosives. This could not have been done by jet fuel had there been any real planes that actually really entered the buildings before they exploded, rather than crumpling external to the buildings with parts, bodies, seats, luggage, wings, tail falling to the ground beneath, where we have photographic evidence of the street and sidewalk beneath the facades of both the North and the South Tower. And there is no such debris. There's no debris from any aircraft having actually hit the building, for the simple reason that no aircraft actually hit the building. So we have a very interesting parallel there, where the government's own evidence, in this case about 9/11, contradicts the government's official account. It required a very sophisticated nuclear demolition to destroy the Twin Towers, which, by the way, has been the subject of an extensive discussion and debate on oons.com, which is a marvelous website that has published a piece of mine entitled What's Wrong with Conspiracy Theories, where I use JFK and 9/11 as examples, but also offer links to other research on these matters. I highly encourage everyone here, if you have not already, to go to oons.com and take a look at my article and the discussion, which has now hit 950 comments. And these are not, by the way, silly stuff, you know, flippant remarks. These are serious individuals raising questions where, to me, the most interesting aspect is a post from those who are trying to defend the official narrative of 9/11. Check it out and see what you think. Tucker here then is discovering that in the government's own documents, as in the case of 9/11, the government's own findings contradict the government's official account. Tucker said there were more than 20 unindicted co-conspirators mentioned in Oath Keeper indictments, all playing roles in the conspiracy, who have not been charged for virtually the same activities. In other words, they were doing the very same thing as those who were being charged, and yet they were not being charged. He concluded, so it turns out that this white supremacist insurrection was, again, by the government's own admission in these documents, organized at least in part by government agents. The Fox host pointed out that Merrick Garland, the attorney general, has identified white supremacist group as the biggest domestic terror threat confronting the United States. But, Tucker observed, the FBI has a long history of tracking and infiltrating them. He also noted, and this is, I think, a very appropriate observation, two persons involved in the plot to kidnap and kill Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer last year were both FBI agents, and that a 2015 Islamic terrorist in Garland, Texas, had been texting with an FBI agent. So he observes, because of January 6th, the chief law enforcement officer in the United States of America and other members of Joe Biden's cabinet, we must now use law enforcement and military force to arrest, imprison, and otherwise crush anyone who leads opposition to Joe Biden's government. It is their position, for they said that out loud. They did yesterday. We're living through the transformation of a formerly Democratic Republican to something else. This is an authoritarian system. And of course, overwhelmingly, the Democrats would prefer to talk about the fake insurrection at the Capitol. rather than what happened last summer, where we had all the riots and protests and looting and arson that was advocated, supported, encouraged by Democrat leaders, including Kamala Harris, including Nancy Pelosi, including Mad Maxine. I mean, it's all insane, but very clever from the point of view of psyops. Distract attention from the narrative you don't want to be discussed to the narrative you do. And that, of course, is what we find has happened here. Meanwhile, we have Merrick Garland announcing the National Strategy to Combat Domestic Terrorism, where he cites the U.S. Capitol riot as justification. Now, this is another classic maneuver by deep ops. They have one source of false information, and a second source cites the first source as though it were authentic to support an additional action or movement. That's classic here. You plant the seed of a false flag attack, and then you treat it as though it were real to take the action you want to achieve. We saw that, for example, at Sandy Hook, where they faked an attack. It was actually a two-day FEMA drill, a mass casualty exercise involving children, in order to justify extensive gun control, where just a month and 2 days later, on January 16th, following the December 14th staged event, Barack Obama signed no less than 23 executive orders to constrain our access to weapons under the Second Amendment. Just outrageous. Meanwhile, Attorney General Merrick Garland announced a new strategy to combat domestic terrorism after the Biden administration completed a sweeping assessment of the threat posed by domestic violent extremists following the January 6th insurrection. Really, it wasn't an insurrection. The Capitol Police were ordered to invite them in. We have footage where you see managers and directors telling them where to go and what to do. We know the doors to the Capitol are held tight by massive magnetic locks, which had to be released from the inside to allow the intruders to enter the Capitol building. Garland, unsurprisingly then, just like Obama in relation to Sandy Hook, tied the new policy directly to the attack on the U.S. Capitol. The department, he said, has an enormous task ahead to move forward as a country to punish the perpetrators, to do everything possible to prevent similar attacks and do so in a manner that affirms the values on which our justice system is founded, on which our democracy depends, which, as Garland knows full well, is staging phony attacks on the in Sandy Hook, Boston at the Marathon, Orlando and Dallas, Charlottesville, Parkland, Las Vegas. Those were all phony attacks. Just to offer an illustration in relation to Las Vegas, there were, I estimate, as many as 500 in the audience of 20,000 for the Country Music Festival. That was, according to the official attack, fired upon by a shooter on the 32nd floor of a wing of the Mandalay Bay Hotel, one Stephen Paddock. 500 recruited by crowds on demand within the 2 weeks before the Las Vegas event. So they were there in the crowd. Others, however, were, you know, being played, did not know what was going on, didn't understand that this was a pre-recorded soundtrack of machine gun sounds of machine guns firing and military weapons, which fire in three-shot salvos. Didn't realize that in the middle of the Mandalay Bay on the fourth floor, you can see coordinated visual special effects, lights flashing to simulate a machine gun firing, and then from higher up floors, lights and three-light blasts to simulate the weapons. A brilliant IT guy noticed you could hear all of this with equal clarity all over Las Vegas and discern that it was a high-quality recording being played over the public address system. I had a friend on Facebook who reached out to the three closest hospitals to the center, the open theater where the event had taken place, to ask if they'd had any gunshot admittees after the event. And all three hospitals acknowledged, no, they had not had a single gunshot admittee. And indeed, the third was very cooperative and said, I think you're calling about that drill. No, no one was shot. You ought to check with the local police. And of course, that's exactly the case. Mona Alexis Presley, who's done brilliant research across a multiplicity of issues, actually was able to track down the obituaries that were published in USA Today and found they were all based on persons who had died in different states or on different dates or from different causes of death. In other words, the obituaries were totally faked. This is an interesting contrast to Parkland, where allegedly some 17 students were killed and they forgot to put up the obituaries. That's what happens in these matters. They're so slovenly, they're so bad, they're so carelessly conducted. Meanwhile, Merrick Garland, and by the way, where all of these fake staged events were legitimized, made legal by Barack Obama by means of the Smith-Mutt Modernization Act of 2012, which nullified the Smith-Mutt Act of 1948, which precluded the use of the same techniques of disinformation and propaganda, including staged events abroad that have been used in order to bring down governments, foment coups and the like by the CIA and other intel agencies, just in time for Sandy Hook. So if you want to know who legitimized all this, it was Barack Hussein Obama, where Sandy Hook was an Obama, Biden, Holder, Malloy, Connecticut State Police, Newtown School Board event, where the crisis actors who faked having kids at Sandy Hook appear to have been rewarded handsomely by somewhere between $27 and $130 million in donations from sympathetic but gullible Americans, which divided by the 26 surviving families would go from $1 to $5 billion for having feigned lost a relative or a child or a loved one at Sandy Hook. Now, Garland claims, and this is just absurd beyond belief, the resolve and dedication with which the Justice Department has approached the investigation of the January 6th attack reflects the seriousness with which we take this assault on a mainstay of our democratic system. He listed several instances of domestic terrorism and violent extremism in our recent past, including the Charleston, South Carolina church shooting. That was with a Dylan Roof. I looked into that, completely staged. When they arrested him, the first thing they do was took him to McDonald's to have a Big Mac. The congressional baseball shooting, which I believe was in fact authentic. The violent protests in Charlottesville, Virginia, allegedly by white nationalists and right-wing extremists, where I've exposed this repeatedly again and again and again, where the governor, Terry McAuliffe, a buddy of Hillary Clinton, had the Charlottesville mayor have the local police stand down so he could use the state police to channel the peaceful protesters objecting to the removal of a statue of Robert E. Lee into a violent confrontation with Antifa and Black Lives Matter members who'd been bussed in by George Soros, typically even on the same bus. Then he mentions, too, the Pittsburgh synagogue shooting. Miles Mathis has done a brilliant job of dissecting. Again, totally phony. No, nothing like that was taking place. And then the mass shooting at the Walmart store in El Paso, Texas. If you look at my reports about this, you'll see the shooter, when he came in, was wearing one style of short trousers, and when he left, a different style. So, you know, I've observed, I guess while he was in shooting up the people, he figured since he was at Walmart, he might as well pick up a new pair of trout. This is just insulting, embarrassing, shocking, unsurprising. They're shelling out all kinds of money. Let me tell you, you would have thought that what happened last summer with all the riots, all the looting, all the arson was being conducted by White Lives Matter. Apparently, Merrick Garland hasn't noticed that these were not white supremacists who were creating mayhem all over the nation, whether it was in Minneapolis or Portland or Seattle. It wasn't White Lives Matter doing the dirty work here, Merrick Garland. I mean, this is insulting beyond belief, but it's just what the Democrats want. And look, if you want to review crime in terms of race, overwhelmingly, the majority of crimes across the United States in virtually every single category are done predominantly by blacks. That the one category where there's a significant or notable difference has to do with alcohol. Cases involving the consumption of alcoholic beverages, where American Indians who have a genetic incapacity to dissolve alcohol in their system are more frequent. Otherwise, here, for example, murders of blacks and whites in the U.S. in 2013. If you take the blacks killed by whites, which is relatively minuscule, it turns out blacks killed by blacks is 55 times more frequent than blacks killed by whites. Blacks killed by whites, only 1/55th as frequent as blacks killed by blacks. Indeed, whites killed by blacks is 10 times more frequent than blacks killed by whites. Whites killed by blacks, more than 10 times as frequent, where whites killed by whites is roughly proportionate to the whites killed by blacks. But blacks killed by blacks, 55 times more frequent than what Black Lives Matter is protesting. So it's pretty obvious we got a problem here, and it has really nothing to do with white nationalists. It has to do with a Democratic Party agenda that is totally fraudulent. And I know we're up to the break. Be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? and that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, there turn out to be lots of absurdities taking place these days. It's rather fascinating. Vladimir Putin has compared career man Joe Biden to the extraordinary individual Donald Trump. This was from in relation to their meeting. Russian President Vladimir Putin called President Joe Biden a political career man who likes to posture as macho, while also saying former President Donald Trump was an extraordinary individual. He made his remarks to NBC News, the first news American news organization the Russian leader has granted an interview to in 3 years. It's pretty fascinating that he made these observations where his event with Biden was rather lackluster, and where Biden declined to have a joint interview at the conclusion, even though that's the normal practice, no doubt because Biden's cognitive incapacities and limitations would have stood out glaringly in contrast to the very astute, intelligent, articulate, and concise responses of Vladimir Putin. NBC interviewer Akira Simmons asked Putin to compare his relationship with Biden versus Donald Trump. Putin responded, "Well, even now, I believe that former U.S. President Mr. Trump is an extraordinary individual, a talented individual. Otherwise, he would not have become U.S. president. He is a colorful individual," Putin said. "You may like him or not. And he didn't come from the U.S. establishment. He had not been part of big-time politics before, and some like it and some don't like it, but it is a fact. President Biden, of course, is radically different from Trump because President Biden is a career man," Putin said. "He's spent virtually his entire adulthood in politics. That's a different kind of person. And it is my great hope that, yes, there are some advantages, some disadvantages, but there will not be any knee-jerk reactions on behalf of the sitting U.S. president. That will be, we will be able to comply with certain rules of engagement, certain rules of communication, and we'll be able to find points of contact and common points." The host reminded Putin that Biden claims to have called him soulless to his face a decade ago. Putin replied, "I do not remember any inappropriate elements of behavior on the part of my counterparts. I don't think that anything like that has happened." And it would be, he added, "Perhaps I did say something, but I do not remember. I believe it was a total fabrication by Biden handlers to, just as Putin has strictly observed, make him look macho." Putin, of course, also denied Russian involvement in the spate of cyber attacks against major American industries in the last few months. When the host brought up allegations of Russian government using cyber attacks or repressing domestic government opponents, Putin claimed the interviewer was not letting him speak. "If you muster patience and let me finish saying what I mean to say, everything will be clear to you, but you are not liking my answers." Putin continued, "You don't want my answer to be heard by your audience. That is the problem. You are shutting me down. Is that a free expression?" he added. I think Putin has our number. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton, who has frequently cast doubt on the results of the 2016 election, which in fact was rigged for Hillary, but where rural voters turned out en masse to support Donald Trump, overwhelming their best effort to guarantee that Hillary would be the next president, says doing so regarding the 2020 presidential contest is doing Putin's work. Clinton made the unsurprising remarks in an interview on Morning Joe. "We never thought we had to worry about domestic enemies," a former first lady lamented. "We never thought we had to worry about people who didn't believe in our democracy." Sadly, what we've seen over the last 4 years, and particularly since the election, is that we have people in our own country who are doing Putin's work. Clinton, Hillary, suggested some lawmakers may be doing the Russian president's bidding, either wittingly or unwittingly. "She is a broken record. This whole Russian hoaxing is so absurd, I even refuted it in a book I published years ago, exposing the Russia hoax. I mean, this is all completely phony fake. It was orchestrated by Hillary's campaign manager, particularly John Podesta, in order to... who turns out to be the pedophile in chief in relation to Pizzagate, which is a grim reality and not some product of a overactive imagination, in order to conceal, first of all, that Hillary run an incompetent campaign and that most Americans really know her and do not like Hillary Clinton, that she is just not a likable person. She's, in fact, a disgusting human being. Second, that Hillary had her own entanglements with Russia, whereas Secretary of State, and with the approval of Barack Obama, she sold 20% of the U.S. uranium reserves to Russia for a massive $450 million donation to the Clinton Foundation. I mean, that's what this is all about. And then of course, you know, she wanted to have an excuse. She wanted to have an excuse. She's so convinced she's entitled to become president that she will say anything to promote her own agenda, her own malevolent agenda. And I have no doubt that she, along with Barack Obama and others of the Obama, you know, clique, including Valerie Jarrett and Susan Rice, are the puppet masters behind the scene manipulating Joe Biden in terms of what he should say and what he should do. Hillary, further along the interview, suggested former President Trump elevated Putin at a joint press conference with the Russian leader in 2018. The problem is that Trump has elevated him, Trump, from the very beginning. Even when he was running in 2016, lifted up Russia. So it's difficult to say, let's turn the clock back and go from where I thought we were when I left being Secretary of State and disgracing the United States by, among other acts, promoting the all-out assault upon Libya, which may have been the most humane society ever created on the face of Earth in human history, where Muammar Gaddafi was using the resources of Libya to benefit the Libyan people, national health care for all, national public education, warehouses stocked with food so no one would go hungry. He was also engaged in the Great Waterworks Project that would have turned North Africa into a veritable oasis, and in addition, was introducing the gold dinar, which would rapidly have become the currency of all of Africa. These were brilliant innovations on the part of Muammar Gaddafi, whom I regard as a very great man, a nationalist leader who cared about his people and was wrongly demonized by the Western powers because the Rothschild banking industry, which controls our media, didn't want to have the gold dinar. Indeed, it was when I discovered that the resistance to Gaddafi, as its first act, had founded a new central bank, that it was apparent to me that something was completely wrong, because the Rothschilds have had trouble with Muslim countries, since in Islam, usury, or making money off of money, is forbidden. That means the whole Rothschild enterprise of making money off of money is in conflict with Islamic society, which I believe is an underlying reason and rationale why we get so much demonization of Islam. Hillary promoted the slaughter also because it appears the French wanted to retain Africa as a neo-colonial preserve for them to exploit for its natural resources. Hillary was instrumental. Gaddafi remarkably didn't even put up a fight, but was surrendering to a location specified by the Department of State when Hillary had his convoy traveling under a white flag of surrender interdicted, and Gaddafi brutally murdered and raped with a bayonet. I mean, this is all disgusting beyond belief, but it's par for the course with Hillary Clinton. No one has cast more doubts on elections than the Democrats, of course. The House Democrats tried objecting to the certification of the electoral votes for Donald Trump in 2017 on 11 separate occasions. On 11 separate occasions. So obviously it's offensive and a violation of democracy for any Republican to object to the certification of the electors for Joe Biden 2020. Democrat Stacey Abrams, credited with helping deliver a victory for Joe Biden during the last presidential cycle, claimed Trump was an illegitimate president. Anytime a leader is afraid of people speaking their minds and making their selections, he is illegitimate and should not hold office, Abrams argued last April. Biden even made the same assertion, agreeing with a woman at a campaign rally who said Trump was an illegitimate president in my mind. I absolutely agree, Biden replied. Well, that's really quite remarkable coming from a bona fide illegitimate president. Former President Jimmy Carter claimed in June of 2019 that Trump didn't actually win the election. I mean, this is unreal. You know, my opinion of Jimmy Carter continues to drop further and further and further. I think a full investigation would show that Trump didn't actually win the election in 2016, Carter said without evidence. He lost the election, and he was put into office because the Russians interfered on his behalf, all of which is nonsense, false claims, reflecting the massive ignorance of someone I have in the past regarded as a reasonably good guy, as a reasonably good guy. In a speech at the DNC this past summer, even Hillary implied Trump would steal the 2020 election. Don't forget, Joe and Kamala can win by 3 million votes and still lose. Take it from me. Meaning that, of course, is what happened to me. We mean numbers so overwhelming, Trump can't sneak or steal his way to victory. I think right there you have the reason why they so overdid it, why the theft of this election was so blatant from so many directions. They needed numbers so overwhelming, Trump can't sneak or steal his way to victory, meaning even if there's a tremendous turnout for Donald Trump, that the Democrats are going to have so many votes that it's not going to make a difference. And indeed, you know, you go back to Sidney Powell's release of a map, an electoral map of the actual results before all the numbers were manipulated, and the nation is red to coast to coast, where Trump took California and Minnesota both, as I had myself been predicting, where he actually also, won around 80 million votes and 410 electoral college votes. I mean, it was overwhelming. This is what they had to deal with. And of course, this is why what's going on in Arizona is so incredibly important. The hand counting of 2,089,563 ballots in Maricopa County concluded Monday, ending the first part of the historic Arizona audit. The remaining paper evaluation will be finished in the next 10 days or less. So what we're talking about is a completion by Saturday, June 26th. So that's 8 days from now. Meanwhile, Wisconsin lawmakers visit the Arizona election audit, say a similar review is needed in their state. Two Wisconsin Republican state lawmakers said Wisconsin should authorize a November 3rd election audit, similar to the one being conducted in Maricopa County, after they traveled to the county to observe the audit. State Representative Janelle Brantgen, a Republican who chairs the Campaign and Elections Committee, said a review of the election was needed due to the significant private funding that was used in several major cities in Wisconsin, according to WizPolitics. However, she wasn't sure if the Wisconsin Legislature Audit Bureau has that authority. Listen, we need to restore integrity as we have huge numbers of individuals with questions about a process become highly politicized, she said. President Biden was certified as the winner during the 2020 election here in Wisconsin. Representative Dave Murphy told a local news website he believes Wisconsin should conduct a similar audit, while asserting that mainstream media outlets have distorted the audit. Over the past several weeks, auditors have been reviewing the 2.1 million ballots cast in Maricopa County, which has drawn scrutiny not only from media outlets, but from the U.S. Department of Justice. I think the press is trying to spin it in a different direction. It feels like they're always trying to spin it in the most devious type of way they possibly can. In an interview with a Journal Sentinel, Murphy said he had to gain the approval of Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, a Republican, before going on the trip. But he met with a CEO of a Florida-based firm, Cyber Ninjas, which is leading the audit while in Arizona. This was a very buttoned-down operation, he said. The precision and security that I saw there was unbelievable. Auditors started in April their review of ballots, election systems, and voting machines involved in the November 3rd election in Maricopa County, stating they expect to complete their work by the end of June. The auditors noted they would produce a report about their findings. Some Arizona state Republicans recently vowed to take action should any irregularities be found. Democrats, including Arizona Secretary of State Katie Hobbs, have continually decried the Arizona audit, saying it's unorthodox and partisan. The procedures have continued to change, Hobbs, a Democrat, said in a June 13th interview. The adherence to security practices has been very lax. Obviously, in fact, it's been precisely the opposite. In late May, Vos, the Speaker of the Wisconsin House, told local media outlets he will hire three retired law enforcement officials to investigate the state's election process, noting that they'll work with an assembly committee with investigative powers. We need to have a fact basis to continue to show the public in Wisconsin that, number one, we continue to take these irregularities seriously, and that at the end of the day, the laws that we propose are based on facts in addition to anecdotes. After returning from Arizona, Murphy said those three investigators hired by Vos will only answer to the speaker and his aides, not the Assembly Elections Committee. On the one hand, I have to give the speaker credit for bringing in the three investigators and the attorney to oversee it. On the other, they are in charge of the operation, not our committee. Republicans have, since the conclusion of the November election, observed outside groups, including the partially Mark Zuckerberg-funded Center for Tech and Civic Life, provided support in some of Wisconsin's largest cities. Five of the biggest received some $6.3 million from the Center for Tech and Civic Life, an organization Republicans have suggested is partisan in nature and needs to be investigated. Well, yesterday I received a report of rather dramatic events in Arizona where David Rodriguez has put out a video about them. I will play it now and discuss what we have here.
DOJ is threatening to step in and stop the audits.
I'm going to turn up the volume.
DOJ is threatening to step in and stop the audits. The AZ National Guard is now surrounding the audit or area or the arena, wherever they're doing the audits. So this is like a standoff. It's whoever has the bigger guns, folks, and this is going to be all tested right now. So the DOJ threatening to step in, and they don't make steps like that. They don't threaten unless they're going to do it, okay? So you all need to be prepared that they're probably going to step in and stop this whole process. Wendy Rogers is coming out saying, threatening the AG, saying, Attorney General, saying, hey, you step in, you mess with the Arizona sovereignty, you're going to jail. Folks, this is the closest to civil war we've ever been. This is the closest to civil war I've ever seen. This climate that we're in right now, states have a right to flex their sovereignty. But the federal government is going to flex its power.
Well, this is a pretty fascinating development where he's suggesting that the Arizona National Guard has been deployed around the convention center where the ballot's taking place because the Department of Justice is threatening to send in federal forces to upend it. Now, think about this. It's completely outrageous because you're talking about a responsibility that the state legislatures possess under the Constitution to determine how their electors are cast. There's no federal authority for an intervention of this kind. So it's completely outrageous that Merrick Garland would attempt to do something of this kind. On the other hand, it is likewise completely unsurprising because the Democrats are desperate. It looks very much as though if the Arizona audit is exposed, that the Democrat fraudulent theft of the election is going to become apparent to the entire world. The illegitimacy of the Biden-Harris administration will have been demonstrated conclusively, and that, politically speaking, all hell is going to break loose. Now, I have more stories, too, but I'm also welcoming callers today at 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452. Call in, Mitchell will field your call. We'll answer, you know, any questions, take any comments you have about these and other issues. It's pretty interesting that several Biden measures are being blocked by courts. For example, Biden's oil and gas lease ban has been blocked by a federal judge. Biden's farm relief program, which was restricted to minorities and excluded whites, has similarly been blocked. The whole idea of Biden and Harris running a racially based, you know, stimulus or virus pandemic recovery operation based on racial distinctions is insulting and embarrassing beyond words. But there it is. The country is basically non-racist, as a colleague of mine observed. Barack Obama was elected to be president twice by something like 65 to 69 million votes by American voters. It happened not just once, it happened twice. Barack Obama, in case anyone hasn't noticed, is black. And the very idea that Barack Obama and even his purported wife, Michelle, should be, you know, complaining about the abuse of black Americans when they have been so privileged is frankly insulting beyond belief. Bruce, mute your form until I bring you in after the break, okay? We're getting a lot of feedback. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you. Meanwhile, I'm going to be reporting a lot, including an eighth grade girl who blasted the school board for a policy that would allow boys into girls' rooms. Jolene Grover, wearing a shirt that read, "Woman is female," argued 2 years ago. I was told Policy 1040 was just an umbrella philosophy and you weren't going to allow boys into the girls' locker rooms, but here you are doing just that. Her mother took her out. She continued, "Everyone knows what a boy is, even you," she said, looking at the board members. "Your proposed policies are dangerous and rooted in sexism. When woke kids ask me if I were a lesbian or a trans boy because I cut my hair short, I should tell you these modern identities are superficial." She claimed her guidance counselor responded to her concerns about privacy and safety, noting that bathrooms have stalls. "Now boys are reading erotica in the classroom next to girls," she added, "and you want to give them access to girls' locker rooms and you want to force girls to call those boys she?" How wonderful that this young woman, 14 years old, should call out a school board for implementing these absurd Democrat-generated policies that are promoting transgender and denying biological reality. I mean, it is disgusting beyond belief. We'll be right back.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either," available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
That the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried for years and years to use passive resistance
and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Give us your thoughts. What's on your mind, my friend? Give us your thoughts, Bruce.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was muted. You hear me now?
Yeah, just fine. Go ahead.
Okay, great. A super show today so far. I want to commend you.
I appreciate it. Go ahead.
Yeah. Do you recall, I think it was about 10 years ago, people in the truth movement were warning these neocons, the conventional conservatives, that the Patriot Act was going to end up being used against domestic terrorists, and they were going to be designated as domestic terrorists. Well, we've seen that come to pass, and it's quite sad. And also during the Obama era, there was a poll taken of people on active military status, if they would fire on Americans in order to do so, and a large number, I believe a large majority, said no. And so now you witness this purge, ongoing purge, first of the generals during the second term of Obama, and now throughout the lower ranks of anyone who probably would resist firing on Americans. We are being targeted for it's going to be Soviet Union 2.0, you know, the Bolshevik Revolution. It's pretty damn scary. It's Merrick Garland. He looks like he's taking his orders straight from Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL. It's quite concerning. Do you agree?
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, I know. The Patriot Act, you know, that was thousands of pages long, pulled right off of the shelf after 9/11, obviously. They were using this orchestrated event, which was really executed by Israeli operatives in New York City, primarily. They had brought in over 200 Mossad agents posing as art students. They were even located in the Twin Towers. They were prepping the building, I believe, to create the cookie cutter like cutouts in the facades to simulate the impact of aircraft, which was a physical impossibility. I mean, it's amazing that Americans are so, you know, unsophisticated regarding science, even the elements of physics, that they don't understand that an aluminum tube crashing into the side of a 500,000-ton steel and concrete building is going to crumple external to the building. It's like throwing an empty beer can into a stone wall. No matter how hard you throw it, it's not going to change. You got people talking about straws in trees after tornadoes and don't understand that that occurs because the trees are twisted by the winds of the tornado, open cracks, and straws and other elements sometimes become caught within them. They even cite this test involving a jet fighter on a railroad trestle with a rocket propulsion into a concrete barrier, and how it blows into a million tiny pieces. It was made out of a synthetic material. It was filled with water. It was sent at high speed against a concrete barrier. But most importantly, it didn't pass through the barrier. I mean, the arguments we get, Bruce, about 9/11 range from, you know, silly to completely absurd when they seek to defend the official account or any variation. In my opinion, it has to do with the power of suggestion and how they had this guy dressed in a Harley shirt, come to be known as the Harley guy, rush up to explain it all when everyone else was scratching their head claiming, wow, the intense fire from the jet fuel must have caused the steel to weaken or melt and brought about a cascade of floors upon one another that brought the buildings down. But it was total bullshit. Yeah, it was physically impossible. The design of the buildings were such that each floor was designed to carry 20 times the actual load it would be expected to carry into the future. And of course, that reduced going up so that the steel was 6 inches thick in the sub-basements, then 5'4", worked up to a quarter inch thick at the top, which means the actual mass at the very top was the least mass in relation to the rest of the building, where Chuck Baldwin, who's a retired high school math and physics and chemistry teacher, calculated for every unit of downward force, there were 199 units of upward force. In other words, it could not have happened, which means the official 9/11 account is a work of scientific absurdity, a political piece, politics trumping science. I mean, we see this again and again, Bruce. So I think your point is very, very appropriate.
Yeah, how about the elevator section towards the lower third of the building were very large. Like you stated, it was thicker at the bottom than at the top. And these were massive beams of steel arranged like a lattice or a box structure, and they just melted straight into the basement. You can watch several videos of this, of them just sinking like a butter being melted in a frying pan. Oh my God, yeah. And did you know in October, this was published on the cleveland.ndmedia.org, Israeli embassy in New York City, a radiation hotspot. In 2006, an aerial survey was done in New York City looking for radioactive materials. They found the Israeli embassy was a radioactive hotspot, and it was inexplicable. Well, a year later, Mayor Bloomberg tried to outlaw the ban of Geiger counters by civilians. I think that's rather curious.
Well, you know, this seems to tie in with the Samson option, where it's been an Israeli plan. I believe it was even authorized by Golda Meir when she was PM to plant nuclear devices in the capitals of the major European and American cities. In that if Israel were ever on the verge of collapse, if Israel were going to go down, it's going to take the rest of the world with it by igniting all of these nuclear devices, which I believe explains why the Israeli embassy is a hotspot, that they appear to have brought them in diplomatic pouches, which are not subject to inspection. So, you know, people have to understand that Israel is not our friend. Israel exploits the United States. Bibi Netanyahu in 2020 observed that America is the golden calf, that we are going to suck it dry and leave it to decline as the world's greatest welfare state, because that's what we do with nations we hate. Think about it. Think about it. This is a prime minister of Israel. This is a guy who actually initiated, dreamed up 9/11, which was designed to create the false impression that Arabs had attacked the United States on 9/11, which they sought to bolster by having a phony call into an anchor covering at the time, claiming responsibility by the Palestinian Liberation Organization, by also showing footage they just happened to have at the tip of their fingers of Palestinians rejoicing to convey the impression that that was contemporaneous, when I recognized from the beginning that was archival footage, which has subsequently been confirmed, of Palestinians rejoicing from a past political or religious event. And it had nothing to do with 9/11, where the Palestinians were just as slack-jawed and dumbfounded by what was being reported as the rest of the world, but where the Israelis controlled the ops. Veterans Today has had some really good stuff, not only on the use of nuclear devices on 9/11, but the role of the Israelis. The plot was actually far more vast, where vans with Israeli operatives and explosives were intercepted, where they were intending to blow up the Lincoln Tunnel, the Holland Tunnel, the Brooklyn Bridge. They were going to seek to isolate Manhattan as an island. It was going to be truly catastrophic. But very good New York police, who in the past have been among the very best in the world, but are now being savaged by the insane policies of Bill de Blasio and his nut job wife, who appears to be an outright communist dedicated to destroying the United States, has begun by seeking to dismantle the NYPD, which may have in the past been the best in the world. So, Bruce, you know, I mean, I'm agreeing with you, and there's so much more going on here.
Yeah, and those terrorists, what was the numbers, the total numbers? I've read 60, I've read 200 in total Mossad agents that were tracked and detained or identified, and then they were released. They were released without charge by the same Department of Justice that's declaring that anyone who resists, who's white, and who resists the corruption of our democratic process is a domestic terrorist. You know, the absurdity are just dumbfounding.
Bruce, a key here is that Americans have no idea of the degree of corruption of the Department of Justice. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And the FBI, did I mention that in Las Vegas, where the crowd was seated by crisis actors hired by crowds on demand in the couple of weeks before, when bona fide spectators who'd come for the concert shared what they had observed, what they'd recorded on their laptops and their cell phones with the FBI, instead of taking the evidence and recording it, they wiped them clean. They wiped the hard drives clean. I mean, this is so disgusting. It's so disgusting. You know, it's enough to make you want to puke. Go ahead, Bruce.
They lost the video of the Ryder truck in Oklahoma City, you know, and they only released like several frames from the Pentagon on 9/11. Criminality. It's the Department of Criminality. It's what it is. That's the Department of Justice. It's the Department of Corruption and Criminality. And I don't know how we're going to get out of it. That's what scares me the most. We thought, you know, we could vote someone in, maybe like a Trump to fix things, but he was just bowled over by it. He couldn't fight it. They're dug in like an Alabama tick, to take Jesse Ventura's quote, you know? I have to put it on mute, listen, and maybe I can come back later. I won't hang up.
Well, Bruce, I'm delighted you called. I'm delighted you called. Yes, I have other stories to present. Anyone who'd like to call in, the line is open, 540-350-352-4452. I repeat, 540-352-4452. So the 52 repeats. Call on in and share your thoughts. Meanwhile, I'm rather dumbfounded that Mark and Patricia McCloskey have pled guilty to charges and are going to surrender their guns. These are a wonderful couple. They're both attorneys in St. Louis, where they were set upon by a massive crowd of Antifa, poured onto their property, and they simply brought out their weapons. He had an AR-15. She had a handgun to protect themselves from the obvious manifest threat of this massive Black Lives Matter crowd approaching their home, have now pled guilty to misdemeanor charges and will surrender their guns. I am so disappointed. Mark McCloskey, a lawyer, pleaded guilty to a Class C misdemeanor of fourth-degree assault, while his wife, Patricia, pled guilty to a Class A misdemeanor of second-degree harassment. They will pay the maximum fines of $2,750, but will not serve any jail time. More notably, however, they will be forced to forfeit the weapons they were holding when they confronted BLM protesters who are marching, it says here, near their home, actually on their property. The two have claimed in interviews the protesters were trespassing. Noted Black Lives Matter protesters in St. Louis and other cities have committed arson and have engaged in acts of violence. The couple previously pled not guilty and were slated to go to trial in November. The BLM protesters told him, "They were going to kill us," said Patricia last year. "They were going to come in there. They were going to burn down the house." She recalled what demonstrators said. "They were going to be living in our house after I was dead. They were pointing to different rooms and said, that's going to be my bedroom. That's going to be the living room. I'm going to be taking a shower in that room." Richard Callahan, a local prosecutor, that wrote that some of their claims were unfounded. There was no evidence that any of the protesters had a weapon, and no one I interviewed realized they had ventured into a private enclave, which is simply absurd. If you looked at the grounds there, there was a wall and a fence that clearly defined their property boundaries. And besides, ignorance of the law is no offense. That you committed a violation of the law isn't excused by your not knowing that you're committing a violation of the law. The couple gained popularity among conservatives after photos taken by media outlets last year showed Mark wearing a pink polo shirt and holding a rifle. It was, in fact, an AR-15. And Patricia holding a small silver handgun outside their property, in front of dozens of protesters. The McCloskeys later appeared at the Republican National Convention and endorsed President Donald Trump for re-election. Mark McCloskey has since launched a campaign to run for Missouri's Senate seat. In May, when announcing his campaign, he wrote, "An angry crowd marched to destroy my home and kill my family. I took a stand to defend them. I am a proven fighter against the mob. When the mob comes to destroy our home, our state, our nation, I'll defend it." He wrote, "I will never back down. Help me fight back." Sad to say, those were bold words, but now folding in the case of adversity, I don't like that at all. I believe this guy would have been a shoo-in for the Senate had he had he stood fast. His declaring I'll never back down and then turning around and backing down doesn't cut it. Circuit attorney Kim Gardner, who had charged both of them, she was a George Soros type, like Kim Fox in Chicago, who excused Jussie Smollett, let him off the hook, even though the evidence was as conclusive as evidence ever gets, was later removed from a role in their case after a judge in late 2020 ruled she appeared to have started prosecution against them for political purposes. Duh. Yeah, you figured that out? Figured that out? So since these guys are attorneys, I'm really baffled as to why they should have, you know, folded, pled guilty. I really, really do not like that. Meanwhile, on the positive side, all 29 Utah sheriffs have promised to steadfastly protect the Second Amendment amid the gun control push. Every sheriff in the state of Utah has signed a letter saying they'll safeguard the Second Amendment in the midst of proposed legislation and recent executive orders authorized by fake President Joe Biden. Importantly, the Second Amendment of our divinely inspired Constitution clearly states the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, said the statement signed by all 29 sheriffs in the state, released by Cache Sheriff Chad Jensen's office. We hereby recognize a significant principle underlying the Second Amendment. The right to keep and bear arms is indispensable to the existence of a free people. No doubt about it. Their letter and promise were prompted by increasing public concern over constitutional rights, namely the Second Amendment. As your elected sheriffs, we individually and collectively pledge to do everything within our power to steadfastly protect the Second Amendment and all other individual rights guaranteed by the Constitution. We understand the destructive influences currently existing in our country will only relent when women and men everywhere genuinely care for each other. We must rely on providence and care deeply about preserving the Constitution and its freedoms in order to be a strong and prosperous people. While the letter did not make mention of any specific elected officials, bills, or orders at the federal or state level, Democrats in Congress have recently introduced or passed several bills that would enhance background checks, ban magazines that hold more than 10 rounds, and so-called assault weapons, which aren't anything of the kind. Separately, a rule introduced this month by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, still referred to as the ATF, at the request of the Biden administration, would reclassify firearms that have stabilizing pistol braces as illegal. When individuals use accessories to convert pistols into short-barreled rifles, they must comply with the heightened regulations on those dangerously and easily concealable weapons, the DOJ said earlier this month about the rules. The DOJ also argued that the braces allow people to easily convert pistols into these more dangerous weapons without going through a background check or meeting other requirements. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki suggested in April Biden has an appetite to issue orders relating to gun control, which came after he announced extensive executive actions, which are not orders, to regulate so-called ghost guns and introduce proposals for red flag laws. The president is not going to wait for Congress to act to take additional executive actions. This is the beginning, she said at the time. Republicans have expressed near unanimous opposition to the Democrat-backed legislation on guns, as well as Biden's recent orders. At the state level, several governors have recently signed bills that would classify their states as Second Amendment sanctuary states, a matter with which I agree wholeheartedly. And of course, we know the demonization of AR-15s is absurd. In fact, there are, you know, in excess of 5 million AR-15s in the country. And the only cases in which they've been used, to my knowledge, are fabricated events like Sandy Hook or Parkland or Las Vegas. These are fake events that try to demonize what is by far the most popular and versatile weapon for home defense, but also to oppose tyranny available to the American people. And the idea that it should be demonized as an assault weapon is clearly a political effort to take a rifle that in some versions can be fired automatic, but in the version available to the public cannot, into an assault weapon or weapon of war, which are fully automatic. Automatic weapons have not been available to the citizens of the United States since around 1935. But the Democrats don't care. The Democrats don't care. I do believe, however, that the Democrats shot themselves in both feet when they moved to defund the police, which has had horrific consequences. Crime is on the rise all around the country in areas controlled by Democrats, not in those controlled by Republicans, but those controlled by Democrats on the rise. And in my opinion, there's no way the public is going to be compliant with any effort to compromise our Second Amendment rights, given especially that the defund the police movement has made it apparent that Americans have to be capable of defending themselves. Remember, if you call the police because there's an intruder seeking to break into your home because they have guns and you don't, it can take them 20 minutes to show up, but the mayhem occurs typically in the first 5 or 6. So if you're unable to defend yourself, by the time the police show up, your daughter may have been raped, your wife murdered, you mugged. It's ridiculous. So we'll be right back. But think about it. The Second Amendment is our most important, because we need the second to defend ourselves on all the others.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
I'd like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
The Jussie Smollett case is simply stunning, of course, because you show the corruption of the Democrat Party at a very practical level, where Kim Fox, who was an attorney who dismissed the charges against Jussie Smollett, which would subsequently be reinstated, even though there was a mountain of evidence that he had faked a hate crime. I mean, stunning stuff. Where he claimed to have been assaulted by two rednecks who had a bottle of bleach and a noose at 2 a.m. in the morning on what was then the coldest day in Chicago. Cold enough, the bleach would probably have frozen. And who's going to be walking around at 2 a.m. in the morning carrying a bottle of bleach? Looking for a black gay actor coming out of a subway store. I mean, it's ridiculous. He claimed they assaulted him, but it turned out they were two Nigerian bodybuilders, one of whom was Jussie Smollett's personal trainer, the other an extra on the set of Empire. He paid them with a personal check for $3,500. There's convenience store, the hardware store, CCTV, closed circuit footage of them buying the stuff at a hardware store. It turns out that Jussie Smollett is the nephew of Kamala Harris, that Kim Fox has described Kamala Harris as her mentor. I mean, all of which is ridiculous, but the degree of corruption manifest here is simply overwhelming. I mentioned before, white farmers win fight against discriminatory criteria for federal COVID release. Well, here's the story. A Wisconsin federal court has temporarily stopped payment in a federal farm loan forgiveness program that allocates benefits on the basis of racial categories. 12 farmers and ranchers across 9 states filed the lawsuit against the Biden administration, saying they're ineligible for relief because they are white. The American Rescue Plan Act of 2021 directs the USDA, Department of Agriculture, to give preferential treatment to businesses owned by women, veterans, and people who are socially and economically disadvantaged. The federal law uses critical race theory to define socially and economically disadvantaged. So it only includes minority groups. I mean, this is so blatantly unconstitutional on its face. You know, I mean, it just tells you the degree of corruption of the Biden administration that they would even attempt such a thing. I mean, it's grotesque. But what of all the years of desegregation, of non-discrimination, all the efforts that have been made, you know, to affirmative action programs and so forth, not to mention then the election of a black president twice with 65 to 69 million votes. I mean, the idea that the United States is racist is really quite ridiculous. But the Democrats are trying to make it the reality. The Democrats are trying to undo our entire history and turn us back into some kind of tribal nation divided on the basis of race and gender and even sexual preference issues, which is just offensive in the extreme. I'm pleased to be joined today by Scaredy Cat. Scaredy, join the conversation.
Hi, Jim, and also hi, Mitch and Bruce from Texas. So, Jim, you mentioned, okay, so all this chaos and upset between blacks and whites and accusations, one group against the other. So I want to mention a name, Oscar Svarte. He is a Germanic family, Russian, his family was banished to Siberia, and now there's a German community in Siberia. So they're Siberian or Russian Germans. And the reason is I loved his quote, which is a short one. He said, "Modernity is deeply blind." And I think that is really a good foundation on which to base our current efforts. So he's obviously, we used to think of blindness in the positive sense of Lady Justice, you know, putting up a blindfold on her eyes so that she doesn't see and recognize the people, the persons who she's judging, in case one is a friend of hers and that she might be biased. She just hears the justice and the events of the crime, and then she judges who is right and wrong, simply, totally on the basis of evidence and justice, not to favor one group or one person, according to her own personal likes and dislikes. So I think that when we look at Black Lives Matter, that is simply a corporation. It is only a gang of people, and they put a very good phrase as their name. So we should always think of names of corporations and organizations as just as a logo. Totally ignore it and see who is pricing it. That is, who is providing the money to run it. And so who is running it is transnational corporations. And as a side comment, by the way, that's the real trans, T-R-A-N-S, on which we should concentrate. That is a gang of people just hopping around from nation to nation, thousands of miles, countries apart, and they just do what they ever will happens in that particular country. So that country's people, so now we are all Americans here, none of us want any of this upset to be happening. And as you said, and I heartily agree, there is no racism. People are very friendly. Everybody knows Americans are friendly. And that is the culture. And in a filthy figment of a rich person's imaginings, they say racism exists. And the modern term, every year, every decade, they have new ideologies which they present. And then the Jew media, the Jew culture, which is the richest culture on the planet. They impose when somebody from their culture has an imagining, a filthy imagining that is total unreality, then hurriedly thousands and thousands of Jew culture's media follow up and hypnotize the entire countries with it. You know, this critical race theory you mentioned. So really we should wind back, as another side comment, this modernity, which is making us deeply blind, we should go back into our own families' conversations and grandparents' history 100 years ago and think, oh, critical race theory, and I mentioned it last time also, so it might be a bit boring, but CRT, oh, I know what that is. Yeah, that was an invention that white people made called the cathode ray tube, and it enabled televisions, a cathode ray tube to deflect electrons into pixels on a phosphorescent screen. Oh, yeah, I know what CRT is, and that is the real CRT, cathode ray tube, and just bring back into our own blindness a little gap of reality, which a filthy imagining, filthy billionaire, trillionaire's mind is imagining. It's only, we shouldn't even use such a beautiful word as imagining, but it's a figment of their filthy mind that the media imposes on the rest of us because they're trying to harm us. Okay, sorry, I spoke a lot. Oh. Go ahead.
Oh, Scaredy, it's all good. All good stuff. I think I agree with everything you've been saying here. And it's just, to me, absolutely stunning what's happened to America. This is not the country in which I grew up. And the changes have been just alarming and profoundly disconcerting. And the Biden administration appears to be moving forward whole hog in embracing all kinds of measures that are going to make America worse, more divided. In fact, I am convinced they are part and parcel, and their election was indispensable to this move to destroy America. I mean, there's just no other way to see it. We're talking about economic, we're talking political, we're talking about in terms of morality and ethics and even militarily, where you got this Lloyd Austin as a Secretary of Defense now, who claims he's going to weed out white extremists from the military. My God, it's an all-voluntary organization. Everyone in there is patriotic. They're seeking to do their best. What he really means by that is anyone who supported Donald Trump, anyone who isn't enthusiastic about Joe Biden and the Democrats' agenda to destroy the nation. I mean, this is just, it leaves me virtually speechless. It's just calamitous. Scaredy, we have another caller here, Sal from Colorado, to join. Stay on the line, Scaredy. Sal, join the conversation.
Hey, Jim. I'm really ashamed of the McCloskeys for pleading guilty. They didn't do anything wrong. Whoever was in charge of the case against them made a gun that was not operational. They framed these people. Why are they pleading guilty?
Sal, I'm baffled. I thought of all people, they were a wonderful case of Americans standing up for their own rights. I mean, if you can't protect your own property, what the hell can you protect? You just open your home to any stranger who wants to move right in, seize it, take control. This is just outrageous. I'm so disappointed in them. I thought this guy had a future as a candidate for the Senate. I expected him to be a shoe-in, to be a virtual guaranteed next Republican senator from Missouri, but he's thrown it all away. I mean, this compromise is not going to go down well. After declaring he won't back down, he backs down. Give me a break.
Oh, man, I was really disappointed in that. That's actually one of the most disappointing events that I could think of in recent time, because they've told me brave those people. I don't believe either one of those guns were operational at all.
Well, I don't know about that. I would have thought they were completely entitled to defend themselves. I mean, for God's sake, you got a mob on your property, and you had a guy who's defending that they didn't know they were trespassing. How can they not know they were trespassing?
They broke down the gated community.
Right. Right. They took appropriate measures. This is damn near as bad as a Jussie Smollett dismissal in Chicago, meaning to me it's just as consequential and outrageous. And my disappointment in the McCluskeys cannot be overstated. They did the wrong thing.
Well, see, the other thing is that if there were any precedents to be set by this case, by he and his wife pleading guilty to this, that's going to make a lot of other people back off when BLM comes to their door and says, we're going to kill you and take your house from you and live in it.
Well, I'm still prepared to blow intruders away, but I tell you, a lot of people may find their resolve has been weakened by this unexpected turn of events. I'm not happy about it even remotely, Sal. I thought they were a perfect example. I fired an AR-15. It's very lightweight. It's very versatile. It's really the ideal all-purpose weapon. But remember, the Founding Fathers declared the Second Amendment because the people had the right to defend themselves against a tyrannical government. Remember that having just fought through the Revolutionary War, that counted on citizen soldiers to participate in declaring the independence of the United States and upholding and making it the fact of history, which was a great event. These Founding Fathers were so smart in so many ways, Sal. I mean, my admiration grows day after day.
It's amazing how they were able to try to see into the future, hundreds of years into the future, to see the issues that we would have to deal with at this moment.
Well, if we were only following the Constitution, and of course, the cases that have been decided in appropriate way in accordance with the Constitution and to enforce the laws in accordance with the Constitution, I think most of the problems of the United States would disappear overnight, but it doesn't happen. You not only have gross cases of Democrat corruption, as in the instance of Kim Fox, you've even got Biden-Harris blatantly violating all the provisions against discrimination by discriminating against whites. It apparently never crossed their mind to contemplate that those laws prevent anti-white discrimination just as much as they prevent anti-black discrimination. And it's appalling. You have an administration of the United States government engaging in such blatantly unconstitutional on its face actions. And, you know, it appears we can anticipate more and more and more, as I have explained many times. The difficulty occurs between the time these unconstitutional actions or declarations are made and the time they can finally work their way through the courts, which typically takes years to figure out what, you know, that they are unconstitutional, even when they're unconstitutional on their face. That's why I like several of the decisions the courts have issued, cease and desist or restraint orders on implementing the policies, in the expectation that the plaintiffs who brought the suits will eventually prevail because the issues are so clear cut. Now, I agree 100% with that, and I'm very glad it's happened. But, I mean, still we're left with the residual effects of being in a state of uncertainty regarding the status of the law, even when it's so obviously and blatantly unconstitutional. Must we comply or not? So I'm very indebted to the citizens, in this case, these farmers across 9 different states who have joined together to bring this lawsuit. Another problem, of course, that complicates for the average citizen, including me, is that these lawsuits are expensive. They cost money. Attorneys charge big bucks. And really, if you seek to represent yourself, as I was forced to do in my Posner versus Fetzer Sandy Hook lawsuits, they can, you know, take advantage and treat you like a pinata, as I feel I was treated in the circuit court here in Dane County, by denying me the right to defend myself. I mean, look, the dispute was over the authenticity of a death certificate. A dispute was over the authenticity of a death certificate where it states right on the death certificate that the cause of death was a multiple gunshot wounds inflicted at a public school at 12 Dickinson Drive in Sandy Hook, Connecticut on the 14th of December, 2012. And yet the judge ruled that all the evidence I had for my defense, that it had been a FEMA drill presented as mass murder, that nobody had died at Sandy Hook, was irrelevant. How could it be irrelevant to the truthfulness or accuracy of a death certificate when the death certificate claims this was a death that occurred at a shooting that I deny even occurred because it was a FEMA drill, technically a mass casualty drill involving children, where we even found the manual and I published it, included it as Appendix A in the book, not be relevant to the authenticity question when the party, the decedent, is alleged to have died at Sandy Hook during the mass murder there. I mean, it's just outrageous. We have Bruce back. Bruce, join the, and I can always tell because I can hear the background noise, Bruce. I don't know how we deal with that, but you're welcome to. You're welcome to rejoin the conversation. Bruce, you're welcome to rejoin the conversation. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to know if you're aware of the backstory concerning the McCloskeys and the Reform. Let me see. The Central Reform Congregation Synagogue that's next door to them.
Tell me, Bruce. I'm not quite making out every word, but go ahead and repeat.
One second. I'm going to go to speaker.
Is that any better?
Actually, it is. Yes, I can hear you more clearly. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. In 2013, the McCloskeys got into several arguments and threatened legal action against the Central Reformed Congregation that bordered their property. Mr. McCloskey had destroyed beehives that were placed there by the congregation. Evidently, maybe they're allergic to bee stings. I don't know, but He destroyed them and told them to clean it up or he'll sue them. And there were other, they were bad neighbors to each other. And the Central Reformed Congregation has played a role in previous protests over racial injustice. In 2014, the synagogue offered itself as a sanctuary for people protesting the police killing of Michael Brown, et cetera, et cetera. And so I believe the McCloskeys were targeted from the start. The BLM was sent there, and so they were kind of set up to be taken down. You know.
Are you saying this was a synagogue?
There's a synagogue next door to their property.
So this is a Jewish religious organization next door to the McCloskeys. Has been in contentious legal issues with the McCloskeys for years. That to me makes it highly probable they were targeted for all this act. I'm so glad you brought this up, Bruce. That's a very stunning and important fact of the matter, it seems to me, in relation to what's happened here. Do you have any idea, any sense of why the McCloskeys would back down and now plead guilty?
Maybe they were blackmailed. That's the usual MO, you know.
I just don't know what sort form of blackmail it could be. Of course, death threats are not at all uncommon here. He has, in my opinion, destroyed his prospects for election to the U.S. Senate from Missouri by doing this after declaring he won't back down to back down. I think that's it. That's it for McCloskey, in my opinion. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you scratch the surface. The BLM is run by Jews.
it's very evident. You can just type in your search bar and Google will bring it up. St. Louis couple who aimed guns at protesters had run-ins with synagogue. It's on the Jerusalem Post, and it'll give you everything you need to know. I just thought I'd throw in that tidbit.
Well, just say a word or two more about what we would find from the Jerusalem Post, which I found to be a highly reliable and accurate source of reporting. What do they say about run-ins with synagogues, Bruce?
Okay. There's another story I'm pulling up here from stlouistoday.com. The St. Louis couple charged with waving guns at protesters have a long history of not backing down. Okay, when Black Lives Matter protesters marched up Kings Highway on June 28th and turned through an iron gate into the magnificent private street of Portland Place, they encountered a couple who have for years nearly constantly sued other people and ordered people off their property.
The couple have a history of litigation?
Litigation and not backing down, threatening legal action.
So why did they back down? And why did they back down in this case? Does that article give any hint?
No, but we can only surmise there must be a real good reason. The same reason Ross Perot dropped out of the presidential race. Look at Hastings. Look at Michael Hastings. If you don't back down, if you threaten them too much, there's a rabbi from California actually went on video and it was available on YouTube that said, you know, if you get in our way, we'll have Mossad in the United States kill you.
Yeah.
And they have a license to kill. This Department of Justice, this FBI, you know, they give them a free pass to do what the heck they want.
Bruce, I'm so glad you called back in. I want to thank you and Scaredy Cat and Saul for calling in. We're bumping up against a break. I want to thank everyone for listening. Wish you a wonderful weekend. Spend time with your friends and your relatives and your loved ones. We have no idea how much time we have left. Thanks for being here.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect, Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was...